Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. You might have noticed that we missed last week. That was because I was barely able to talk. I'm better now, more or less. And yeah, we're good to go. So with me this week, we have Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
And Ginny.
Hi, all.
Got heaps to talk about this month, this week. And we will get into it just after the typical Hatsune Miku intro track. And welcome back. That was our typical Hatsune Miku intro song. Another good one. Always good when Miku's concerned. So yeah, hope you enjoy that one. Okay, so it is the first week of July. And as usual, we're going to have a look at, I guess, some of the game releases that are coming out this month. And the good news for everybody who has been playing games through the year and has ended up with this massive pile of backlog because it's been a pretty crazy year for releases. July is relatively quiet, so everybody can cheer about that a bit. What do we got? We have Final Fantasy 12 is obviously the big release that comes out on July 11. There's also Yonder, which looks pretty damn good. Splatoon 2, if you've got a Nintendo Switch, that comes out this month. Also the Fate Extella port to the Nintendo Switch, that's also out. Pyre, which is, you know, something that people are looking forward to, I believe. And Hey Pikmin, for people who are still playing their 3DSs. So that's... Avon Colony, if you're into the whole city builder genre. Team 17 has a good one on the way there too, which I've had a bit of time playing with over the last couple of weeks. And yeah, really enjoyed it. So that's kind of it, really. It is a quiet month, and it'll ramp back up in August, so you can use this month to catch up on the games from the first half of the year or play the one or two releases that are out. Is there anything on that list that kind of appeals to you, Ginny?
Probably I would have said Layton under ordinary circumstances, but the Professor Layton release is a mobile game, so I'm probably not going to want to pick that one up just because I really, really hate sort of those like free-to-play mechanics of lots of mobile game adaptations. So I guess what I guess all I'm trying to say is I really want a new Layton game, and I won't be picking this one up. But I don't know, everyone's really hyped for Splatoon 2. I'm not really hyped for Splatoon 2. It's not really my kind of game. If I had to pick one of the releases, I think I would definitely have to go for Fate Extella. And surprisingly, hey Pikmin, because I'm one of those people that still play my 3DS. And obviously, Final Fantasy X2, if I ever finish with Final Fantasy 14, I will have time to pick up. But yeah, apart from that, I note that Fable Fortunes are also coming out, and I think that's like the Fable card game. A part of me is intrigued, but also I've been burned in the past by collectible card games, so I'm kind of on the fence about that. I would say it's going to be a very quiet month for me. Yeah.
Yeah, with regards to Fable Fortune, yeah, I think there's just too many collectible card games out there now. So yeah, it's a bit hard to get enthusiastic about yet another one, especially in a fantasy franchise when we've already got, the Elder Scrolls one, Gwent, which is the Witcher one. There's, Hearthstone still around and still popular. So yeah, it's hard to see, I guess, where Fable Fortune will fit into all of that. But who knows? It might be good. It might be. Matt, is there anything on that list that you're particularly looking forward to? Are you a fan of Final Fantasy 12 by any chance?
Yes and no. I'm very much looking forward to Final Fantasy 12 because, and I'm sure I've said this on a podcast before, but when it first came out, I took the week off work and I played it extensively and just really didn't like it. But I think it was also a product of my age at the time and what I was expecting from a Final Fantasy game. And I think I would appreciate it a lot more now for what it is, rather than when it came out when I was 17 or 18 or whatever, and hated it for what it wasn't. So I'm looking forward to giving it another chance. And I think that's about all on that list, so it'll be a nice chance to
That's a very short
catch up
list.
on 100 million other games that have come out so far this year.
But what about Hey Pikmin? Come on, guys. Pikmin is the shit. It's amazing.
I've never played a Pikmin game, and
Seriously?
I don't
Oh
really
my
see what
God.
the appeal is. I mean, I would pro maybe I would enjoy it a lot if I did play it, but nothing I've seen about them has really
Man.
made
Yeah, I
me
must
want to
admit,
try it again.
I'm not the world's biggest fan of Pikmin as a whole. They're fun. I mean, they're fun, but then there's ultimately nothing special to them for me. And I certainly don't think a 3DS kind of downgrade on the first three Pikmin games is going to be enough to really change my opinion on the franchise. But yeah, I mean, for me, Final Fantasy XII is obviously the big one. I'm playing it at the moment, working towards
So
review and
jealous.
stuff. And yeah, I've already also had some hands-on time with it earlier in the month, so early in the year. So there's stuff I can talk about. I mean, it looks amazing on the PS4. It's a game that's scrubbed up really well for the HD generation. Except for Panello, for some reason. Panello looks really weird now, and I don't get it because I quite
Yeah,
like the
she always looked
natural.
really weird, so
No, I liked her back in the day, but yeah, she looks really odd now. I don't quite get her. But Ash looks great, and Ash is the best. So yeah, that's going to be a game. I mean, Final Fantasy XII was pretty divisive. Back when it was released, it was popular, and a lot of people liked it, but then a lot of people really didn't like it because it was a very different direction for Final Fantasy. So there was, the inevitable, large number of people who were looking for a traditional Final Fantasy experience were felt let down by it a bit. But it was pretty pretty important because it kind of, some of the stuff that you see in Final Fantasy 12 has become quite standard for the series since, like the combat system was enhanced and built on for, you know, Final Fantasy 14 and 13 to an extent. And yeah, so I think people will find it an interesting one to go back to now. And yeah, I hope they enjoy it, because it would be good if Square Enix could look at taking or doing some new games in that gameplay world again, Ivalice, because that's also the setting of the Final Fantasy Tactics games, and yeah, it's a good one. I'd like to see them do a little bit more with it. Maybe a Final Fantasy 12 2, something like that. That'd be good.
The new raid for Final Fantasy 14 is set there, based on the world. Yeah. Well, it's not out yet, but it comes out next month or something.
Right. That's cool. That's good to know.
They've got the same writer working on the quest.
Yeah, it's next month. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So they haven't forgotten about that world completely.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know, because it is interesting. I mean, it's based on I guess a semi kind of Middle Eastern kind of style setting, so the architecture and the environments and whatnot kind of play into that. 1001 Arabian Nights setting, which is very underdone in video games, to an extent. It's not entirely fantasy Arabia and stuff, but it's inspired by it, so it's different. It's nice. It's for people that like things a bit different. That's about as different as Final Fantasy gets.
Mm.
Yeah, I also wanted to talk quickly about Avon Colony. I don't know if either of you guys are into this whole city builder genre, but I've been playing that one a bit. It comes out at the very end of next month, and it's really surprising me. It's really good. It's a very classical city builder in the way it's designed, but being set, you know, on a different planet, and a planet where the air is hostile and stuff, introduces a couple of different mechanics which keeps you on your toes, I guess, and it's certainly a visually attractive game. So we don't have enough city builders released these days, especially since SimCity has kind of died off. And I think that any new one in that genre is a good thing.
Yeah, I am looking forward to that as well, actually. I forgot about that before when I was talking, but yeah, that looks really good. And I think it's a game that I've been wanting for a long time, being a sort of a fairly standard city builder but with a sci-fi theme and on the new planet. And there have been other games that have tried to do that sort of thing, but in ways that I didn't really appreciate or enjoy, so I'm looking forward to this one.
It was a bit of a pity that City Skylines was announced for a PS4 release just this week as well. It doesn't come out till a bit later on, but kind of stole a bit of thunder, I guess, from Avon Colony, given that City Skylines is considered to be the better city builder in recent times.
I think that coexists quite well.
Yeah, I think the sci-fi setting will sufficiently differentiate Avon Colony, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I do think it deserves to be a hit game for Team 17 and the developer. I can't remember who the developer is, but Team 17's the publisher. I think it deserves to be a hit. I think it's good quality. It's well made. It plays well on console because they've slightly adjusted how the interface works so that it will work on console properly. And yeah, that's always a good sign as well. It's also a fairly big month for the Switch next month, with Splatoon 2 coming out, which is obviously going to be a very popular game. Splatoon's kind of taken the world by storm. It seems to be Nintendo's new big franchise, and people are really looking forward to Splatoon 2. I'm pretty sure that I'll enjoy it myself. I really enjoyed the original Splatoon, aside from my issues with the aesthetics, which I find to be painfully ugly. And
really?
I find them really unattractive. You
said that about ARMS too, though.
Yes, I find ARMS to be painfully. I find them to be very, very ugly games. With ARMS, the gameplay didn't kind of make up for that, and I didn't find that game enjoyable on any level. But Splatoon was really good fun. I really enjoyed how it played, enough so that I was able to overlook my distaste for the art direction. But yeah, if you look at the pre-order numbers for that game in Japan or something, there's something intense, and the game's going to be huge and sell a lot of Switches. And then a couple of days later, the Switch port of Fate Extella comes out. That's set in the Fate anime universe. It's a kind of Dynasty Warriors style slash 'em up, and it's really good. I really enjoyed it on PS4. Looking forward to having that one on the go. Yeah, it'll be the first kind of Dynasty Warriors style game on the Switch. And while we wait for Fire Emblem Warriors, or, you know, we give up on Fire Emblem Warriors, no, Lin is no good. Fate at least has Saber, and Saber's cool. And welcome back. So this week, or last week anyway, a certain game, Valkyria Chronicles, Chronicles Revolution, was released. And I think it's safe to say that that game disappointed a lot of people. You can go and have a look at the Metacritic rating for it to see just how disappointed people were, coming off the back of one of the best received tactics RPGs of all time. But I wanted to bring it up in the podcast this week to talk about how people kind of talked about that game, because it and a lot of other games gets criticized for reasons that I wouldn't necessarily suggest are productive. So with regards to this game in particular, you know, a lot of people were out there talking about it being boring, or the narrative was bad, to use exact wording. And I feel like it's an interesting example of how a lot of people talk about games in terms that seem to be fairly, I don't know, for want of a better word, limited. It seems like people tend to take a very surface level kind of look at a game and tend to just, you know, draw their opinions purely on the game, purely on a gut reaction, rather than kind of sitting there thinking about what the game is kind of trying to tell them, what the deeper themes and deeper meanings of the game are. And I certainly think that Revolution is a game that, you know, isn't obviously like its predecessors. So, yeah, you've got to get over that knee-jerk reaction first. But then when you start to think about the game, you realize it's actually a really, really intelligent and quite serious game that has some very strong messages to share. But, you know, you don't get those on the surface. You've got to sit there and actually think about the game to get to that point first. I know that you've been playing the game a little bit, Matt, and you know, you've obviously seen some of the responses that people have had to it. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Firstly, I would disagree with you about the stuff not being on the surface, because I think it really is, and I only just started playing it last night. I've played like the prologue and a little bit of the first chapter, so I'm not very far in at all. But even then, it's clear right from the start, those kind of themes and how it addresses them. And I think in the first 10 minutes of the game, it does more things and says more things and provokes more thinking about those themes of war and history and how wars are remembered. It does more of that in its first 10 minutes than most games do in their full run. And I think that's... So yeah, I don't know what people want from it, but I think it's, so far, what I've seen is really good. And also, not boring and a lot of fun just to play and with an interesting story. So yeah, I don't know what people are talking about.
I mean, I don't understand why people describe games as being boring. I mean, for me, you know, words like boring or dull or, you know, uninteresting, these are kind of meaningless words that, you know, people kind of throw out there to simply say, oh yeah, I didn't enjoy the game. And that's fine. If you didn't enjoy it, that's one thing. But to then go and use these kind of really subjective terms that don't have any meaning without substantiating, you know, why is it boring? Well, most people don't tell you why. They just say it is, you know.
Yeah.
And I find that very frustrating because, you know, we're trying to, you know, games is art and all of that. We're trying to deepen the conversations that people have about games, but it becomes very difficult where, you know, you're dismissing a game purely on, you know, whether you had immediate fun with it, and you know, you can't really explain why it is these things. Because, yeah, I don't see how you could play a game like Revolution and come away with it without thinking. Well, without thinking, you know, it's clearly a game that's designed to provoke people into thinking about, you know, how things are done. And yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of that in the discussions that were happening about the game afterwards, which was disappointing to me because I feel that looking back as well at the predecessor at Valkyria Chronicles, if you look, the conversations that were happening about that game were also quite limited in that sense. People enjoyed the game a lot more, but they were talking almost exclusively about, you know, the fairly meaningless stuff. There wasn't a whole lot of deep analysis into what the game was actually telling people.
I think there was, but I think maybe that came sort of later, and as is often the case with that sort of commentary as well, when people have the time to really digest. I have seen a lot of commentary about Valkyria Chronicles and how it deals with war. But yeah, I think that...
In the reviews themselves, or was that all more, but, you know, kind of think pieces afterwards?
I think that's more and more in think pieces afterwards.
Yeah.
Which is what is always going to be the case when more people have time to really digest something. But yeah, I do agree that when there should be more of that kind of stuff in reviews as well.
And I mean, if we look at Final Fantasy XII, which is, you know, out this month, as we were talking about in the last segment, that's another game that has some pretty heavy themes running through it. And again, I wonder whether people will just fixate on, you know, how the upscaling to the PlayStation 4's hardware kind of works for the game's benefit or not, or whether people are actually going to start engaging with its deeper themes. Because, you know, that's a game where you could quite easily, you know, argue that the party of heroes that you play as through the game are actually the enemy as such, or the problem, and the guys that they're fighting against are actually the ones doing the moral right. So, you know, there's a very deep discussion that should be had about that game, and I just wonder whether that discussion is going to happen, even you know, 10 years or whatever it is since the game was originally released.
I
think it's quite interesting that in terms of Valkyria Chronicles not having a big sort of engagement with the themes off the bat. And I've seen some reviews about Revolution, which has, I think, engaged with those themes, but in an incredibly shallow way. Like, I've seen people say that it doesn't tell as meaningful a story about war as the Chronicles, just because you're not looking at war and how it affects, I guess, the day-to-day person, which I think is sort of ignoring the fact that it's really about the evils of, like, revisionism in history and how, you know, the victors of war write their own story. And I think that saying that because you don't have to engage with civilian suffering in a close-up sort of way makes the game less meaningful in the message it's delivering. I think that's a bit of a weird thing to say. I know weird's a very, you know, vague word, but I just feel like I can't see how someone can engage with the core themes of Chronicles and not see that they're still present in this game.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, Ginny. I agree. I mean, one of the great things about Chronicles was that you felt a lot of empathy for the characters because, you know, the narrative was designed about showing you the impact of, you know, war on people. And, you know, it was a very immediate, very easy to kind of emotionally engage with kind of narrative. So, you know, people obviously caught on to that. But you look at, you know, Revolution, and it is, for want of a better word, a more academic kind of topic theme. Yeah, military revisionism is obviously a very major issue in the way that we talk about war, especially, you know, looking back at World War II and some of the way that, you know, now that it's, what, 70 years since World War II? I'm not very good at counting. But, you know, we're at that point in time now where the realities of that war is starting to be lost amongst the narrative that's been built up in the history books about it. And I think that Revolution was built around that topic because, especially to the Japanese, obviously this is a Japanese game, especially to the Japanese, that narrative that's been building around World War II as the actual veterans are starting to pass away now, it's something that needs to happen. It's a discussion that needs to happen, but it's also a discussion that's very hard to emotionally relate to. It's an academic, it's kind of a thought topic. So it would seem that when it comes to those kinds of, you know, more theoretical discussions, we're not quite at that point yet in how we talk about games that we can start to engage with those themes.
Well, yeah, I think we should be able to, and I think based on my limited impressions, I think Valkyria Revolution does a really good job of that, but yeah, people just
we're talking about an industry where, you know, people get excited about punching Nazis in Wolfenstein and that kind of, you know, that kind of very visceral reaction. And then, you know, Chronicles is a game where you have a kind of visceral reaction in the sense that, you know, it's an immediate emotional response. We're very good at talking about games where there's an emotional response to the game, to the material that we're being provided. But we're not quite at the point, I think, where the critical mass of you know, conversations can be had about a game that deals with a more intellectual, less emotionally engaging story. Because I don't think Revolutions is particularly emotionally engaging. It feels dry at times, especially, you know, later on through the game. It does get dry, but that doesn't mean it's boring. You know, dry is a different word to boring. And I think there's a difference there that people need to recognise and don't necessarily do.
But it's all right, because Call of Duty will come out later this year and it will be lots of fun and be a very deep and insightful look at war. And
yeah, war. Everyone's going to love it. World War II.
Yes, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of American flags.
Yeah, I'll have a lot to say about that when it comes out.
Flapping in the breeze.
It'll be like when James went on his rant about Wildlands.
Yeah, look, everything I've seen about Call of Duty and everything I know about Activision and its approach to that series and Sledgehammer Games and its creative talent, I don't see there's any way that that game's going to be anything but a clusterfuck of patriotism. But yeah, well, I guess we'll look at that game when it comes. But
yeah,
I've got no faith in that being anything more than what it looks like from the trailers and whatever. They'll claim it's a serious look at World War II, of course. They'll claim it's, you know, it's dark and it's powerful and stuff like that. But
yeah,
it's not going to deal with the themes in a mature way, that's for sure.
I somehow feel like the same people that were sort of stating the North Korea revolution will probably give Call of Duty World War II a higher score, which annoys me, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think there are issues with how Revolution plays, as I mentioned in my own review. But I think it's a narrative-driven game, and the gameplay is really kind of there just to facilitate that narrative. And I think it's doing the game a misjustice to focus on the gameplay to the exclusion of the story, and then just dismiss the story as boring when it's really not. It's the wrong word to use to describe it.
Or at least if you're going to dismiss it as boring, talk about what makes it boring and why you think it's boring and what, in your view, it could have done to not be boring.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, substantially, like
qualify the statement a little bit.
Yeah, at least you know, make sure that the reader knows that you know what the game's talking about. You know, a lot of the people that dismiss or have been dismissing Revolution as being boring or dull or whatever haven't even bothered to mention that, you know, it's dealing with these themes about revisionism. It's just, you know, they don't show any indication that they actually understood what the game was about. And I think that's where my issue is. You know, if you understand all the themes and you've recognized all the themes and then you still find it to be unengaging, then that's one thing. But if it's just dull because you didn't get it, then, you know, it's not a very good, or it's not a very valuable criticism of the game.
I mean, people were calling Nier boring, but like, they were like, we couldn't make it to a tutorial. It didn't tell us how to save. This game is trash and boring. And I'm like, you played literally 3 hours of the game. You know nothing about the game. How can a game be boring to you so quickly? I think, I don't know. I mean, I feel like boring, as you said, Matt, is a word with no worth. It doesn't explain anything, doesn't add anything to the discussion. And it's just, I really have not enjoyed it being applied to games like Revolution and Nier and games that I think we'll consider have a bit of a, I don't want to call them intellectual games, but it's just, they're games that require time and effort. And sometimes you read these reviews and I just think that, you know, there's no way he would have played more than 4 hours of it. You can't play through the entirety of Nier and feel like it was a worthless, boring experience, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and that I find that Nier to be a really interesting example because, you know, the new one, Automata, obviously had a lot of hype behind it, had a big marketing budget. Mm-hmm. You know, it ended up getting, you know, very good reviews, you know, generally speaking. Whereas the original, which was a much more niche release, exactly the same, you know, tone, the same kind of depth of narrative, and in so many ways, it's, you know, it's exactly the same game as its successor. Got absolutely panned. It, you know, people have only had been able to rediscover it now that Automata's out there, and they realise, you know, hang on, the reviews might have got that one a little bit wrong. But if you look at the reviews of Nier, you know, words that are constantly used to describe it are dull and
exactly, yeah,
boring and unattractive. Like, for some reason, the visual style of Nier doesn't get everybody on board, even though, you know, if you apply kind of an art theory analysis to either of those games, they're quite attractive. They're just not mainstream style hyperrealism. So, you know, it'd be nice if people had, I guess, went into these games with a better willingness to engage with them on a deeper level. If you're going to criticize them, it's the least you can kind of do. And welcome back. So, for the last section of our podcast this week, we thought we'd have a look at something a little bit different, RPG Maker. So, the reason that we thought we'd talk about it to start with this week was RPG Maker FES came out on the 3DS this week. I've been playing around with that a lot. Like, I put a lot of hours into it already. I really am enjoying it. You can look forward to my review of that game, software, whatever you want to call it, next week. But RPG Maker has been around for a very long time now on various platforms. It's been on, you know, console and PC. And, you know, it's something that we've all had a lot of experience using over the years, because as fans of RPGs, naturally, you want to make your own. And if you're not particularly good at coding and the programming stuff, as I am, RPG Maker has been that really good way of getting into, you know, making your own RPGs without having to do the coding and without having to mess around too much with the back-end stuff. And yeah, it's been really good for me over the years. I've really enjoyed it. And I think all of us have memories of using RPG Maker way back on Windows 95 PC or whatever, back when we were young and just wanting to make games, and they weren't officially translated back then, so you had to get a fan translation of RPG Maker or whatever. I think I started with XP, I think, and yeah, the documentation for those things was terrible thanks to the translation. So you'd be muddling around trying to figure out how to do stuff, and yeah, it was a great process. It was a lot of fun. And Matt, you did something similar to me, didn't you? You played around with those unofficial translations back in the day.
I can remember RPG Maker 95, I think, was one of the first ones. And it was an interesting experience, to say the least. And yeah, I mean, I've never made anything particularly good or finished, but that was as much on me as on the software.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing seeing how far it's come now. Like, you look at, what's the new one?
Ace?
RPG Maker MV, I think.
MV, or is it Ace?
I don't know. Is there another new one?
I can't remember if it's...
MV came out sometime last year, I think.
If it was MV or Ace. I know Ace was the one before it, if it wasn't. But yeah, MV might be.
But anyway, yeah, just to see how far it's come in terms of what tools built into it and what you can do with it and the kind of games that people are making with it. It's just really amazing to see. And it's such a good way of, especially now, because it has got so much to offer, it's a really good way of getting into game dev, because it's not just... I mean, like, the early ones were, it was a game dev tool, but with a very limited engine, and nothing that you learned there was that transferable, really. Like, I guess some kind of game design concepts would be, but with the new ones, just in the way it lets you structure events and put the game together, it's kind of like coding, but without doing the actual coding. You are putting the logic together and doing all that, but without having to actually know a language and do all that. And then when you want to, it's got support for coding languages as well. So I think it's a really great way to get into game development.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually create, you know, commercial quality software with RPG Maker. The PC ones anyway. Now, and you know, we've seen some really good examples of RPG Maker being used to make really great games, like To the Moon was made in RPG Maker, I believe. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's an incredible narrative game. And you know, it doesn't have any combat at all. So that shows you, you know, kind of, if you've got the creative ideas, where you can kind of push RPG Maker in terms of what you can do with it. So yeah, I think it's great. I think it gives a lot of people, you know, the chance to dip their toes into game development, ideas in a very safe way, in the sense that, you know, it's not, you don't need to buy textbooks and things like that to try and understand how things work. You don't need to spend hours and hours, you know, messing around with lines of code that you don't necessarily understand. You don't need to even you know, the entry level engines, the professional engines, I say that in inverted commas again, like Unity, you still need to spend a lot of time learning how to actually use before you can get any kind of results out of it. Whereas with RPG Maker, you can create something in, you know, an hour and feel like you're making progress in learning how to use it. So I think it's perfect way to get people into the idea of game development. It's cheap software. You can buy it off Steam for, what, $50 or so, and yeah, you'll get a lot of value out of it if you're into making, you know, your own little RPGs. You can, once you've finished one, you can easily export it, even if you don't plan on selling it. You can share it around with your friends and stuff like that, which I find, which is really cool, because obviously if you're going to go to the effort to make a game, you want other people to play it. And yeah, I've used every bit of every RPG Maker software since I've discovered them. I don't get as much time to make games as I might like, but yeah, I do enjoy playing around with them. And the new one on the 3DS is obviously not commercial software. You won't be able to make a commercial game with it, but it's really simple, really fun way to make very simple little RPGs. And I've jumped on the online, the in-game download platform where people can upload their games and download them, like, you know, Super Mario Maker or whatever you do. And yeah, some of the stuff that people are putting in there is really good. It's fun, and there's a lot of creativity on display. So
and yeah, and the games aren't boring.
Sorry,
and the games that they're making aren't boring.
No, they keep all the cutscenes. They keep the
got good stories and no cutscenes.
Yeah, they keep the cutscenes to under 5 minutes, so you know, you get just enough story that you don't get bored. But I mean, Ginny, do you have any experience using RPG Maker?
Yeah, although probably not as far back as you guys have been using it for. I actually first picked it up. So I went to like this weird sort of, I went to like a computer sort of game programming type class after school when I was growing up in Asia. And so we did things like simple programming, using really basic stuff like logic. And then one of my instructors was actually using RPG Maker VX.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was like, I don't know what was going on. All I saw was like sort of, you know, like she was assigning different textures to things, and then you press a button, and then like a game would appear. Basically, that was the coolest thing in the world. And so I basically forced her to teach me how to use it. I never got very far because I think at that age, I was probably about 9 years old. I couldn't really understand the concepts, like what, like how the sprites and textures translated into actual games. Like the interface was completely confusing. And I just didn't know anything, but just like the process of seeing something being created, I think was really valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of what I would say had kept me interested in computers and games at that age, but it was sort of like seen as like a sort of chore or like after school curriculum thing for me. I think actually seeing someone make and create a game from scratch was a very powerful thing for 9-year-old me. So I've got really fond memories of seeing people use RPG Maker, and I picked up the PC one not too long ago. I would say probably I got VX Ace, I would say maybe 2-3 years ago. And I mean, I think it's great because I have little to no actual like proper coding knowledge. All of that was sort of picked up by me and abandoned when I was 11 years old when I left Asia and came to school in Australia. But yeah, no, I mean, I really enjoy using it. I haven't really ever created a full game in RPG Maker, but I think it's just something about having that software available, I think, is very valuable and very important. It's very educational, I think. And I think it's a good way to build interest in younger people as well about game dev and game creation. And I think often people, like Matt said, I think people get a bit disillusioned when they haven't got, like, coding knowledge and they're like, I'll never make a game, I'll never be good at something. But I think you get these chances to create these stories and create these characters, and you can have it all play out in front of you. I think that's a very valuable experience. And honestly, people saying that RPG Maker should cost $20 are just delusional. Like, they're crazy. People just sort of underestimate the quality of the product and also everything that it does for you. And I think probably one of the reasons why it's taken so long to catch on is just there hasn't been that appreciation in the market for actually what game dev is about. And I think that's contributed to sort of RPG only being sort of slowly or recently being picked up as something that's good and popular and kind of worthy of just having around.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things I really like about RPG Maker now that it's on Steam and it's got support for Workshop and all that kind of stuff is that, you know, you can get different assets quite easily to use with it, because you know, you can get just about anything you can possibly imagine. You can now get tile sets and character graphics and whatever off the store as DLC or whatever, which is I really like that. One of the things obviously with the earlier RPG makers was that you're kind of stuck with, you know, the standard tile sets that it came with unless you were able to make your own sprites and character graphics and stuff like that, which was always difficult. And yeah, that's a good thing. It adds a lot of value to it. You know, you can drop in there and you can get, you know, if you're a fan of making Arabian themed RPGs, for example, there's a DLC pack for that, and you know, sci-fi and horror and whatever kind of game you might want to make.
Which and one for children too, if you want a character instead of kids, there's a DLC for that.
You'll see for it all, which is great.
Yeah,
it's really good. It adds a lot of value, especially because, you know, one of the things that people struggle with is when sitting out to make their own games is obviously, you know, the inability to make the art and stuff. And that's, you know, an overlooked thing about RPG Maker. It does provide you with all the art you need to make the games. You also get the music. You can get music, you know, royalty free and whatever, so you can play around with that, and if you're not able to make your own soundtracks, and yeah, it provides you all the tools that you need, which is really cool. I'm just thinking, I'm trying to think the last time I actually finished making an RPG Maker game myself.
Yeah, it's, that would be
I don't think I've ever done it. because they do take a lot of work, obviously. I think the other good thing about RPG Maker is it kind of makes you realize that, hey, game developers don't just sit in their
backsides and
do nothing for 12 months of the year and then pull something together in a week. It takes a lot of work to make a game, and RPG Maker obviously takes a lot of time. It's not hard, it just takes a lot of time to do. One of the things I always like doing, every time I get an RPG Maker, the first thing I do is go through the process of turning a lot of all the sprites and all the backgrounds and whatever into black and white, and highly contrasted, so they look like, you know, Game Boy graphics.
Oh yeah,
I do like doing that, and I spend so much time doing that when I actually sit down to start making the game, I'll be lucky if I get around to doing a town, building a town before I give up and move on to the next thing, which is unfortunate because. Yeah, as somebody has fond memories of playing, you know, Final Fantasy Legends or whatever on the Game Boy, I've always wanted to make one of those kinds of games myself. And black and white. It's the best art.
Yeah. I sort of like unconsciously finding myself modeling my towns on like Pokemon towns. Like I was like, this looks exactly like my hometown for Pokemon Sapphire. Like, this is not
I think there is a art pack you can pick up for one of them that is actually the Pokemon style graphics. So.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So.